think Nancy has kind of set me up here to look at impact. I don't remember that being in the original title, but if you'd like, I'd deliver another paper I'm working on that will be published in the IDS World Bank journal called soon called Are We Learning Enough? Lost Opportunities and Knowledge Gaps in the Reduction of Rigorous Evaluations of USAID Health Projects. But I don't think it, I'm not prepared to give it yet, so you'll have to wait for that. But I will focus on a somewhat revised topic. My colleague, Mai Hijazi, who still works in USAID, not able to be here, but I have a lot of her data. It's poverty and health inequity. Health inequity is a term that is being used now. And I'm not focusing just on USAID. I've been asked to look at the problem more broadly. And World Bank, UNICEF, WHO are not that much different in the lack of rigorous and independent impact evaluations going on. But I will, since I was the senior evaluation advisor the last 4 years at USAID and the advisor to the Measure Evaluation Project, where we struggled with a lot of these things, I think you'd like, it'd be good for you to know that even though a lot of the problems that have been mentioned come from the absorption of USAID into State Department, Defense Department, and other U.S. Agencies. There are many inside who are working for the John F. Kennedy principles that many of us who served in the Peace Corps believed in. So you can see that I will look at the fourth bullet briefly at the UN, the MDGs, Millennium Development Goals, the World Bank, PSRPs. Here in Washington, we love acronyms because we don't remember what it really stands for. But poverty strategy, I guess, reduction projects, papers. They're paper. They're just papers, just on paper. The focus will be more on the real world, that is individual countries and what is being done there. I like those case studies from Malawi and Rwanda. I lived in Ethiopia for 7 years recently, and boy, the Global Fund, it was really hard to track a Global Fund, and a lot of my students who worked in the field for the Global Funds were complaining they never saw the funds that were budgeted to them. But I will focus more on the country plans because that was the in-depth assessment of the poverty and equity inclusions and how it may have changed now in the last year, how it has changed actually for the better, we think, in the last year, and the discussion. I guess you can probably know that the MDGs, Millennium Development Goals, and the MCC, the Millennium Challenge Corporation, which actually is looking at a lot of governance, peace and governance and democracy issues. They are targets for poverty, and goal number one, and for health. There are about four goals related to health, but there's not really any health equity targets. For example, reducing mortality among the poor. In the World Bank papers, poverty papers, There is poverty reduction, but I see a number of you from third world countries. If you ever had collaborated in developing of those papers, you know, the struggle to try to get health in, even the word health. The Minister of Finance are not that interested in health, particularly at the individual level. So there's very little health, nutrition, or population. And I'll show you analysis of how little population, real population targets there are in these PRSPs. The UNDP, I think, has been exemplary. Their human development reports and their indices, I think they have a better grasp of equity and the investing in people part of it. And finally, the USAID State Tour, and I'm glad the predecessors were showed that we used to call it the 5x5 matrix, where you have five different layers of countries from the fragile, or now they call them developing, rebuilding, to the sustainable, and then the columns. Health does focus, has one of the five columns, investing in people, is health, education, and social services, but also there's health in other columns too, particularly humanitarian column. The good news was, and I don't think it was mentioned by the critics here, but I think the lobbies did affect Ambassador Tobias before the ladies did, and he was able to include the add to the goal, the transformational development goal. They did add reducing widespread poverty, and that was just in January. So there's been, 10 months to take advantage of that. And that really is our foot in the door to deal with it. Okay, the objectives of the looking at the poverty health equity gap, looking at the PRSPs and the mission, USAID mission strategies, and to see how other sectors are doing in addressing poverty, because health was just one of the five pillars. How was economic development addressing poverty? How is humanitarian aid? So we'll look at that too. But health is not doing too well compared to the others. But I do want to say that since January this year, we have observed progress, USAID progress in addressing this new interest in poverty, equity, and vulnerability. And those of you here in the audience, I can see some of you who did help to incorporate this poverty reduction goal in the foreign assistance strategy should be really, really commended. It's made work within the agency a lot easier this year. And finally, the advocacy. Okay, there's a number of new methods going on. I think a lot of people are familiar with the demographic and health surveys and the so-called wealth index, but also World Bank and UNDP have other initiatives. But since I was working on the Measure project, and DHS is under Measure, I know a lot more about the comings and going of the index, so I will use that. The trends analysis of DHS measures of geographic, sociocultural inequity, and economic poverty. We just finished a paper looking at, about 80 countries on that. The desk review that was given to me by World Bank colleagues, but you can see it in the new population strategy they have. But particularly under Measure evaluation, one of the partners did an in-depth look at 85 country strategies, mission strategies. They're five-year strategies. Used to call them results frameworks. They're annual reports. And also the UNICEF monitoring of poverty targets. UNICEF is struggling to do a little bit better in not looking at the averages, but looking at the poverty groups. And then a few more recent activities. Let me just focus on health equity. I mean, equity, I think you know, those of you who well saw the JFK quote. Health equity, looking at differences in health status and access to health care by socioeconomic ethnicity, race, location, social isolation. Also, you mentioned the word vulnerability. I think because of a lot of the money going to countries that are so-called fragile or in conflict, there's an expanded consideration of vulnerability, and I agree with that. You can get a lot more a sense of future of prevention if you work on possible vulnerabilities and resilience. And just finally, on the measurement of the poverty in the DHS, it's actually a measurement of wealth, not poverty. But so you do know that the index is comprised of easy responses to huge questionnaires. And the index of wealth or the lack of wealth is a mixture of the ownership of household amenities, water, light, and toilet, and household assets, radio, TV, and refrigerator. We've had a lot of criticism of this because in rural areas, let's say, many rural areas, it's not so much household amenities that count so much as land and large cattle and other types of access to political and economic power. But anyway, they're working on it. Now, for some of the, getting into some of the initial results that we might know, that this is using the DHS data, the two ways to look at it. One is to look at the ratios of the wealthiest to the poorest quintiles for different types of health services. And the greatest inequities you can see, 4.8, are almost five times more likely the wealthiest quintiles in these poorer countries have skilled birth attendants than the poorest. Contraception is also very, very high inequity at 4.4. Antenatal care 3.1 and 2.3 for vaccination. So the more passive and less proactive you have to be, the more the less inequities you have. The second analysis that I was involved in was looking at inequities, the rural-urban inequities, which is pretty obvious. And what is the are they growing? Or are they getting? Yeah, are the rural areas getting a little less unequal to the urban areas? And this is in sub-Saharan Africa. I think this was 24 countries. So in terms of the total fertility rate, or children ever born at the end of reproductive age, in 16 out of 24 countries, that's what, two-thirds of the countries, the gap is widening between the rich and the poor in terms of the number of kids. In under 5 mortality, it's about 14 out of 24. Progress in meeting the poverty reduction goals of the MDGs, there's a nice indicator they use, and I like the, we've adapted it. It's called the AARRs, the annual, the average annual rate of reduction, annual, so you can really target it year by year. And when we look at the MDGs for my favorite indicator, which is for poverty, which is stunting or underweight, a global indicator, we find Africa is very far behind. The Asian Near East is a little closer, and LAC, Latin America, is mostly behind pace. Anyway, this looks like an older PowerPoint that I had, but anyway, it's not so much different. These are some of the common indicators of poverty, equity, and vulnerability. You can see the vulnerability here down at the bottom, social, ethnic, religious exclusion, the unmet minimum food consumption requisites. I think you're pretty familiar with that. Okay, some findings first from the World Bank. I'll say less about that because I know less about it, and more from the Global Health. Here is the issue that many bank poverty reduction strategies fail to translate population objectives and strategies into specific policies. There's a lot of lip service paid to rapid population growth, whether how rapid it is. But the bank just recently did an analysis in this publication, Population Issues, in April, and of the 27 high fertility countries that had poverty strategies, while most of the countries recognized population growth as an issue, only half had indicators of objectives and strategies to address it, and the other didn't. And even for those with objectives and strategies, most failed to develop specific policies or indicators to measure progress over time. So maybe you're right, the P is a paper and not a policy and a strategy. If it ain't measured, it ain't gonna, I think that was one of your conclusions, right? There's not really a lot of pressure to be held accountable if it's not being measured. Okay, this was a review done of the poverty, equity, health equity indicators in USA country strategies. There were 85 that existed when we started this in 2005, fiscal year 2005 and 2006. And not only looking at the emission strategies, but also annual reports. Well, I won't go into details of the methodology. Time is going, but looked at the strategic objectives, those of you who know how to do a USAID proposal project. Also the intermediate results and the indicators, and also review of these new common indicators for performance monitoring. Also looked at PEPFAR. This is a table which I can help you to summarize. These looks at those five, one, two, three, at least three of the five columns that are related to health and poverty. This looks at the number of results and indicators of poverty and equity in their these 85. And you can see that in the health column, only 10% of the countries had a direct or even indirect indicator of health equity or vulnerability. The humanitarian sector, the third column, is better, 18%. Obviously, economic growth had to, but that was two-thirds. So looking at the four sectors here, health is doing the worst, was doing the worst, I should say. Okay, so it just goes over. But listen, in, let's say, Africa, four of the 27 strategies, countries that had poverty and equity, some of them were really good. Guinea was really excellent, I remember. And one had added vulnerability. It was a fragile state. Then there were complaints that, USAID must be doing more. So the team, this is Bill Winfrey and Karen Forright, looked at, did a follow-up of the new strategies, 17 new African country strategies. And of those 17, four which had poverty equity dropped them. And for health, two of the countries dropped their poverty equity strategies, and one, only one, added it. and that was increasing access to health services among poor and underserved. It seems logical to use that. All right, recent improvement. I've not been told to say this, but I must acknowledge that there are, from such a low level, we can use that as a baseline for watching these improvements. And since Tobias included that poverty reduction, there's really been quite a bit of movement in terms of leadership, the technical working groups, the health policy project now is focusing on it, the publications, even PRB, where I'm a fellow, has this new data sheet, poverty equity data sheet. A plug, if you haven't seen it, go to the booth, 1,000 and something. And if you've been writing new proposals for USAID, you're going to see they're going to request information on how you're going to reach the poorest 20%. Right, Karen? Okay. There is, I would call a state-of-the-art health equity indicator that is now being put in place, a long-term indicator for goals in family planning. That is a 1% point, 1% percentage point increase in CPR, contraceptive use, annually in the two poorest wealth quintiles. Okay? Good luck. And now, finally, on the new countries who have really taken this seriously, I'm told by Mai last week that in Asia we have India and Cambodia. India's always taken it seriously, actually. Cambodia, Africa, Senegal, Madagascar, and Latin America, Peru, and Guatemala. It's not so much poverty as they're looking at the social isolation and cultural discrimination for the indigenous populations. The policy implications, I don't have much time, so I'm not going to talk much about them, but I do want to say that I think we have to realize that there has been resistance by our own health, what did you call them, international health community. There has been resistance to looking at the relationship between health and development, health and fragility, health and stability, health and. A lot of people are still pretty narrow, and they're focusing on their the monies that they've traditionally been used, what do they call them, earmarks, and they're protecting their earmarks. And now they're really being called now to say, okay, well, how are your earmarks helping to contribute to poverty reduction, development, stabilization? So as a social scientist, I, of course, like that, to integrate health and development. But I think there's still this medicalized international public health field that doesn't get it. And so that's, as a scholar who can say whatever I think, I think we've got to get it. We've got to do our own homework and not just criticize the politicians who we know what they're up to. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you all. I think that we accomplished a great deal of the goals of this session, come back right around from the beginning to looking at if we put money in to investing in people, will we get the investment? Will that come out at the end? I think we're really looking at the bucket theory here, and it's a question of refilling the bucket and then whether there's a hole in that bucket and what comes through that get transferred? Does the money get spent, and on whom? Who are we targeting with that money? So we have about 5 minutes, and so we could take a couple of questions real quickly. more question, and then we'll let the presenters decide who can respond. Okay. Who is bold enough to respond to that question? One other question. Do one thing tomorrow to address these issues, what would it be? Okay. Nicole?
I'll take a stab at the last question. I mean, I think for me it would go back to one of the future lessons learned questions for future consideration, which is to figure out how these individual programs work together. And again, at the level of family planning and reproductive health, working with child survival, what extent PMI is now going to be counted as being child survival, and, you know, to what extent PEPFAR is considered to be global health. So it's looking at each of the individual pieces, having a comprehensive strategy, and I don't think actually that we were in any sort of disagreement. You get to a comprehensive view of health and how you invest, and then you can relate that in the context of development. As Kyle said, the indicators or the factors that then actually lead to those challenges. I think there are a couple of things that have happened over the past few years. One is that we've seen this flow of resources. Two, a lot of processes have changed just in general. So there are more stakeholders being involved at more steps in the processes, from coming up with the policies to implementing programs. And so there's a responsibility with all of this money flowing out there now, not only to policymakers about the right policies, but also to implementers and researchers and advocates to say, how is this being spent? How do we justify moving forward? So it's going to take some critical thinking, not in the definition of being negative critical, but critical analytical thinking of how does this work? How does this fit together? And I think once you start to do that, kind of look outside of yourself, see how that reflects back, that is going to be what actually lends to the sustainability of health, because we're seeing we have a lot of money, these are long-term problems, and if we don't show returns on investment, that political will is going to go away, as we have seen as examples for malaria and family planning and other issues over the past 50 years. So that's my one thing, is think bigger and bring it back to what we can do specifically in our respective roles.
I see my last slide is up here, and under research it says rigorous evaluation of impact on the poor, the underserved, and the isolated. I think that we need to demonstrate that the health sector can contribute to poverty reduction. We have to demonstrate that. If not, bye-bye money, because poverty reduction is seen... Pardon? Yes. Yes. In a large part, it's our responsibility to do rigorous, independent, transparent evaluations. The target are our programs to, I mean, the poor is a vague term. You got to, you know, do your initial assessments, your baselines, and have some participation of the underserved and the isolated, and then document how their participation in your programs is improving, is investing in people. And I think with that in hand, you can move this agenda forward.
And I think I would echo the earlier point you make about the medicalization of foreign aid. I think that's a really important one, and I think we have for too long thought in silos, and I think de-siloizing will have an important beneficial effect on the quality of aid. If you think, for example, about the synergistic interconnection between health and poverty, people are sick because they're poor, and people are poor because they're sick, and we have to deal with sort of both sides of that tension. And so, for example, in low and middle income countries, the first two mortality drivers are cardiovascular disease and cancer, right? But you almost never hear about, for example, tobacco cessation or the action of international tobacco companies in the developing world. And so I think we have to think, as Nicole said, much bigger picture and then bring it back home. Thank you.
Yes, I'm not familiar with this IMF
report, but I'd be glad to stay in touch with you and we can discuss more about this. And to answer your question, I think it's important to continue investing in the health systems and integrate those investments with the disease-specific or disease-focused initiatives such as PEPFAR.